President Obama's promise to close the prison at Guantanamo appears unlikely to happen on his watch. Yes, the president announced this month that 10 low-level Yemeni detainees who couldn't be sent back to Yemen because it's in turmoil were accepted by neighboring Oman, so now there are just 93 Guantanamo prisoners remaining. But there's no resolution on what to do with the so-called high-value prisoners, the alleged architects of terrorism, with Congress rejecting the president's attempts to move or try them on U.S. soil. Tops on that list is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the confessed mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, captured in 2003, held at CIA black sites or secret prisons until 2006 when he was transferred to Gitmo. Allegations of torture, waterboarding at those sites have tangled up every legal move since. David Nevin is his lawyer. He joins us now from Boise, Idaho. And David, what your client told interrogators at the CIA black sites is classified. But in 2007, in a separate military tribunal at Guantanamo, he said he was responsible for 9/11 from A to Z, that he decapitated Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. A lot of Americans have trouble understanding, you know, why he said these things. Why are we still waiting for a trial?
Yes, because if I torture you today and tomorrow and the next day for 3.5 years, and then I finally say, well, listen, Robin, I'm through torturing you now, but some other people would like to talk to you, and they ask you all the same questions, and you make statements in response to that. Well, why did you do that? Why did you agree to speak to them? Well, in part, inescapably in part, you did that because of your history of being tortured and because of your conditioning and so on. There are substantial legal questions about the admissibility of every statement that Mr. Mohammed has made.
That the time at the CIA black sites tainted everything that followed.
Exactly. If you were tortured, you might well say all sorts of things to try to get the torture to stop or try to anticipate what the torturers wanted and so that they would stop torturing you. After all, I believe it was in the late 1700s that Napoleon recognized that when you torture people, they'll say whatever you want them to say.
Right. Well, and researchers today have said the same thing. But that's the trial. You know that there's been a real resistance on the part of Congress, state officials, to bringing your client and others to the U.S., even though there are super max facilities. And now there's a move to try to build a prison, but the cost overruns have been pretty incredible. Do you understand why Americans do not want Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in their town?
No, I don't. I mean, I understand it as a political matter. But we have this ability and we long have to hold people safely.
No. There's concerns he might escape, concerns he might infect others in a prison. And the psychological, you know, I'm pulling different thoughts people have expressed over the years, the psychological impact of just knowing that he's there after the destruction that he claims he wrought.
Well, honestly, I am not a good person to speak to what is the best place for Mr. Mohammed to be held. If we're going to hold him, we have an obligation to hold him in accordance with the Geneva Conventions and more generally just to treat him humanely. And I think I have to let others decide what the best place to hold him is.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much you can also talk as a lawyer. What's it like to represent him? What's it like to interact with him? Does he spout hatred for the United States, as he's said to have, according to the transcripts from the tribunals? He also has reportedly said he apologizes for killing kids in some of the attacks. What does he say to you?
There are sharp limitations on what I can report about what he says to me. And so, you know, anything I say about that has to be taken as being not, comprehensive. But I can tell you that Mr. Mohammed has always treated me respectfully. And I have accorded him the same respect. And we have a good working relationship.
And you will know that that's both professional and repugnant to people, if they believe half of what he claims to have done.
Well, and we have a very clearly established process in this country, and we've built the country on it, the idea that people are presumed innocent until proven guilty. we give them, we insist on them having a vigorous defense. The importance, of course, it says in some ways more about us than it does about the person in question. But none of those ideas can be carried forward if the simple fact that we accuse someone of doing something really, really, really bad means that we don't defend them, that we don't give them a defense, that we don't accord them these presumptions that we accord anyone else. If all it took was allegations that were bad enough to suspend all of this and do away with all of these rights and privileges, well, pretty soon these rights and privileges wouldn't mean much for anybody.
Well, meanwhile, it feels like a bad Beckett novel. You know, you and dozens of others traveling back and forth to Guantanamo Bay over and over again over 13 years. What do you think's going to happen?
Well, I have guessed so many times at what was going to happen and have been wrong every time over the years that now the most I can say is that I have no idea what will happen next. I do know that we are spending wild, crazy amounts of money to litigate and hold these men in the way that we're holding them. I know you've seen the figures, something on the order of $3 or $4 million per detainee per year. We put an entire court system on a big airliner every couple of months and fly it to Guantanamo, judges and witnesses and lawyers and clerks and media and observers and witnesses and all of it. We all get on an airplane and we take our court system to Guantanamo. I mean, it's sensible that people would look around and say, is there another way to do this? But, you know, what exactly happens next is really beyond me.
That's David Nevin, lead civilian attorney for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the self-proclaimed architect of the 9/11 attacks, still in prison at Guantanamo Bay. David, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, let's bring in James Rosen, who covers Washington for the McClatchy Papers and recently made a trip to Guantanamo. And James, I just made that reference to Beckett and Waiting for Godot. You've told us this is the most bizarre thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, it really is. I've covered a fair number of federal court cases and trials, state cases, and I've never seen anything even remotely like this. The defense lawyers have filed over 400 motions now, and there are more to come. The prosecutors have filed responses to them. For most of the week that I was down there, they litigated only one of those hundreds of motions, mm-hmm. and that motion was on whether female guards and the military police should be allowed to touch the detainees, to touch them as they escort them to various places they need to go on the naval base.
Because the detainees were making the case through their lawyers that this was reminding them of some of the torture that they had when women were touching them, which in their faith is abuse.
It's even worse than that. The Walter Ruiz, one of the defense attorneys who I thought was a particularly able courtroom litigator, he asked one of the former commanders of Camp 7. Camp 7 is where the most important, the so-called high-value detainees are held. If the camp was aware that when these detainees had been held in CIA black sites before they were brought to Guantanamo, that at least some of them had been smeared with fake female menstrual blood.
Yeah. This was part of the sexual humiliation and abuse by female interrogators that was alleged to have happened in the CIA black sites.
I think it's a little bit stronger than alleged because yeah. Senator Feinstein in the Senate put out a report, of course, a little more than a year ago that documented in great detail some of these abusive practices. So, you know, it hasn't been proven in a court of law yet, but it certainly is beyond just kind of an empty allegation.
Well, and your point is that this is just one of the motions, you know, regarding whether or not females should be able to touch them.
And they litigated that single motion for 3.5 days. And then another motion that they litigated for the better part of one day was whether a comment that President Obama made in 2009 on television when he was trying to convince Congress to move the detainees to the United States, in which President Obama basically said that he knows that some of the Americans are upset now, but they won't be upset when these detainees are convicted and put away for life. So here you have the commander-in-chief essentially saying before a military justice hearing that these guys are guilty. And the defense lawyers argued that that was another sort of thing that fatally tainted the process.
Well, and then the fact that it is a military commission as opposed to federal court. You point out federal courts in the U.S. operate 52 weeks annually. They don't take off, whereas the 9/11 military commission met for just 11 weeks in 2015. And as we just heard from David Nevin, every time there is action in Guantanamo Bay, the entire court workings have to get on a plane and go down there. What do you think, James Rosen? What do you think is endgame here?
Basically, the consensus is that the trial may not even begin for another decade. They've got hundreds and hundreds of motions to go through. One of the things I'll point out is that the chief prosecutor is General Mark Martins, and he said as recently as 2 years ago that the trial would begin 1 year ago. January of 2015. Now when he's asked that question, he says basically, I'm out of the prediction business.
That's James Rosen, a reporter for the McClatchy Papers. James, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.